Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and cockles. I am your host, Ross Bolin, here as always with Mr. Barrett Dudley. Barrett. The TV and the movies. We're going to discuss them today.
Oh, sure we are, hon. Maybe just one in particular, though, eh?
One movie in particular?
One, well, see, we're already discussing it because...
It's somewhere in between, isn't it?
What is it?
Yeah, let's just jump right into...
Actually, I don't want to jump right in, Ross. I'm sorry to cut you off.
What
like
do you want
to
do?
But there's just a pressing issue that's bubbling up on my phone here, and I feel like it must be mentioned on the TV and film podcast.
Okay.
The price of chicken wings is going out of control. Are you aware of this?
No.
It's just, there's a chicken wing shortage.
I heard about condiments. I heard there was a condiment shortage.
There's a shortage of everything, basically.
Right.
And it's just all factoring into inflation and the fact that consumer goods are just going out the wazoo with, 5-10%. You're going to be paying 10% more for all your Procter & Gamble products come September.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's your Bounty paper towels and your Charmin toilet
paper.
And
I use both of those things.
And your toothpaste. Yeah, who doesn't? Now the chicken wings, and it's like,
The first thing I noticed?
I'm tired of all these damn shortages. Get me some lumber and get me some chicken wings at not astronomical prices, please and thank you.
It's goddamn lumber prices,
God.
God dang lumber prices. But the first thing I noticed back in last year was when I was like, you know what I'll do? I was like, I'll get in shape.
Oh, in the weights.
So I got on the internet
and I thought,
what I'll do is I'll Google weights and I'll just order them and they'll come to my house because Amazon exists. Thank Christ for Jeff Bezos, right?
Right.
We'll get to
right.
that in a minute. But no, Barrett, no. There was a goddamn international weight shortage. You couldn't get a kettlebell for like $1,000.
Yeah.
All the meatheads went nuts and bought up every fucking fitness
Everybody
tool
was
possible.
Like, oh my God. Yeah. All they were like, they knew they were going to need their.
So I'm using the same set I've had since high school.
Fits.
Yeah.
And they went out and they did it. And they just.
You know what I found though? Resistance bands.
Ah. Yeah. There you go.
No shortage of those
no
yet.
No shortage
apparently.
Of those. Yeah.
Probably
yeah.
coming. But yeah. So
also nice
chicken
because
wings.
They you're shipping like what, like 14 ounces?
Exactly. Very cheap shipping.
59 pounds.
Very cheap shipping.
I don't know. You can't buy a 59 pound kettlebell, I don't think, but maybe a 55 one plus some packaging and some boxes. You'd get up to 59.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Some of those
about.
Companies, they make one shape like funny things, and you never know what those weights are going
to
be like.
Anyway, just be on the lookout because everything's just going to shit even more. The other thing I'm steaming on right now is just the fact that like all the disruptors are just becoming what they replaced. So the Uber prices are out of fucking control.
Yeah, I had to stop
Airbnb
using it, basically.
Prices are out of fucking control.
I literally had to delete the Uber app.
The streaming services are all ratcheting up. I don't know if you noticed, but
they've all been
Disney
doing.
Plus got just more got more expensive. And it's just,
we're getting kicked in the face out here is what happened in Barrett.
We really are.
This is a beating.
It's just a beating.
I mean, it's everywhere you look. You can't even get a freaking chicken wing anymore.
Can't even get a damn chicken wing.
Which brings us to our first topic and probably the majority of today's show.
I think so.
A couple weeks have passed here.
It's been almost 2 weeks now. I know I'm late on this because we missed, I was out on vacation doing some ripping and some curling. And so,
I don't think this counts as late because, frankly, it is a it's one of those things where stand-up comedy and comedy specials in general are kind of in a weird place. I'll say this as like a big fan of it, a big fan of stand-up, kind of an obsessive fan, like where I find one I love and I watch it over and over and over and over and over and over. Like I've seen Chappelle's Killing Him Softly, like. Mm-hmm. I don't know, 40 times or something like that.
Yeah.
I had to stop watching Louis, but that's my point. A lot of my favorite comedians ended up being fucking dickheads.
Yeah, and, as they are wont to do.
And it was just a massive bummer to like really only have Dave and Neil left. So I was kind of in this place where I was just like, you know what? Fuck stand-up comedy, man. Like, I'm just not going to pay attention to this shit anymore.
Right.
And then
right.
I got on Netflix one day, a couple weeks ago. Top banner is Bo Burnham's Inside, right? And it was the way I put it before, like it was the graphic that caught me. I was like, I didn't know much about this dude. All right. I remember his face, but as he puts it in the special, he hasn't done dick in 5 years because he started having panic attacks on stage.
You drop one quick thing in here.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know how much you've read up or know about him now that you are a little bit more familiar. But while he has not done stand up for the past 5 years, mm-hmm. He did co-star in Promising Young Woman.
Yep.
And he...
Which is mind-blowing once you've... if you, because you watch the special and, like, he obviously doesn't look like the dude in Promising Young Woman for more than a couple of seconds.
Yeah. And he also has showed off his auteur filmmaking prowess with a movie that he did called Eighth Grade a few years back.
Okay, okay. So it's not like he hasn't been working. He just hasn't been on stage because that's where he was having the attacks.
And then going back even further, I don't know if you remember this from 2009, but he originally burst on the scene as this little, like, you know, shithead 16-year-old writing these parody songs and putting them on early internet and YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So...
vaguely remember it.
Yeah.
And then I think he got in, like, he was like, people tried to cancel him for being a bully or something. Like, he was like, apparently he was an asshole in high school.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, I think that's like a large percentage of the population. So I don't really personally hold that against him, but, I went into this pretty dry is the point. Like, so, I literally hit play and I was like, okay, let's go.
Yeah. And so did I. While I'm familiar with his early parody work and then obviously saw him in Promising Young Woman and knew, and I think I even listened to an interview with him after Eighth Grade, even though I've actually never seen the film, never watched any of Bo Burnham's stand-up. So did not know what his brand of comedy was going to be outside of the original stuff, which was musically based.
Yeah, I didn't know he did a lot of his... It's almost... Well, for this in particular, Inside... is not a stand-up special.
It is not a stand-up special.
This is performance art with a shitload of jokes inserted. And also political and social commentary and extremely depressing life musings.
So this thing is about right about an hour and a half long. It's just under 90 minutes, 82, 87, something like that. And I had to think for a long time about what I thought this was, and I heard some debate. Is this a TV show? Is it a comedy special? Is it a movie? And I'm deading all of that because one of the most interesting things about Inside has been the way that I have interacted with it after watching.
Yeah.
And I walked in here today to sit down in the podcast studio, and you were listening to the music from it.
Yeah.
As soon as that as Inside parentheses the songs dropped on Spotify, it's been all I've essentially listened to.
So you think it's a musical?
So I think it's a musical. Absolutely. And it works just like one, too, because you can pull out the talking pieces of this, and you have most of the special, and you don't even need the little in-betweens. You can listen to this album, the songs, and you just are just like you would with a musical, just like you do with Hamilton or In the Heights or whatever else it is. Cats, our favorite. You listen to the music and you remember what you saw and what that was like, and you continue interacting with it with like this like base of like the you know, the visual piece of it.
Yep.
But the songs are what matter.
Yes.
Memories.
And so that is how I like, just to continue on to my next point here. One, I think it's a musical because it works so well as one and because it's so music focused. Two, I think more than anything, what I was blown away by, and obviously, like, it's super well done. He has so much to say. He does it brilliantly. It's all very, very good and well put together. But this man is a songwriter, dude.
These are hits, Barrett.
These are bops.
these are like, I'm not fucking with you. I'm just going to pull it up. I have played the shit out of That Funny Feeling and All Eyes on Me, to the point that nothing else in rap, country, any genre, including Olivia Rodrigo, is coming close in terms of play count over the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, so...
But now I've started working my way back through the whole thing, as you heard when you walked in, and it's like, I completely 100% agree with your argument that you can classify this as a musical because it is a one-man musical.
It's a one-man show musical, yes.
But it is also stand-up, and it is also incredible, like, just one-off single hits, and, like, it's also a sketch comedy show.
Sketch comedy.
Which is why I land on performance art, because I'm
like... you
call
it performance art as well.
Well, because you watch him deteriorate over the course of it. Like, he starts off relatively put together. Daddy made you some content.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time he turns 30, which is at the exact halfway point of the show, like, the whole thing's fucking genius. The dude's a freak. He's really starting to come off the rails. And by the end, he's butt-ass naked locking himself out of his house.
Yeah, and I think I like using the word performance art here as well, because there is he absolutely utilizes this gray area of what he shows you on screen, because there are moments that I think are fairly safe to say are performed moments.
Absolutely.
They're representations of emotions that he was genuinely feeling, right?
Yes, he was not actually filming himself experiencing, like, I think he was, yes, he was acting. He was acting to show you the experience.
Those are acting moments, right. And so it's like...
And to bring everybody into the world, like, this thing, for me,
is
2020.
Yeah.
Like, this was exactly what I experienced, dude. Like, more than most... This couldn't be more up my alley as a white guy who makes content and identifies with every part of this.
Anybody that knows you well, or even like knows you through listening to our podcast,
right,
could not have watched this and not thought about you.
I mean, it had to have been
the
like
parallel. Like we thought that King of Staten Island, you had some parallels with Pete Davidson, right?
Right.
This like blows that out of the water.
Oh, it's not close.
Based
to
on
anything I've like, the only thing that's close is The Sopranos in terms of something where I've watched it and been like. There's not many things more up my alley.
Yeah.
But The Sopranos almost created that alley. Like this shit, dude, it was like watching somebody crawl inside of my head and create everything I wish I could create. Like it was the most inspiring thing to watch, because I was just like, I'm on the Wikipedia right now, I'll read this to you. Directed by Bo Burnham. Written by Bo Burnham. Starring Bo Burnham. Music by Bo Burnham. Cinematography, Bo Burnham. Edited by Bo Burnham. Distributed by Netflix. That's the fucking dream, dude.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's crazy. No, not many people pull off shit like this. And then for it to be, like, about me almost was fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
So I am almost in a position where I feel like I can't review it because it's too perfect for me. Like, there won't be many things created in my lifetime that touch this realm of, like, I'll be obsessed with this. I'm going to bug the shit out of people about this forever.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be like, I remember when I watched Neil Brennan's Three Mics, and it was the first time I'd seen somebody do stand-up where they inserted a lot of their personal pain and experiences and mental health struggles.
Mm-hmm.
This was like that on all of the steroids. Like, Neil Brennan had to have watched this and been like, fuck! Because part of me watched this and I was like, fuck!
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's going to be tough to beat.
I mean, there is... zero doubt that this will inspire other comedians to enter this weird zone, because he just changed the game with this.
Completely changed it.
Like there will now be this impetus on these other comedians, especially as there has been this shift, right? We all want to, and he touches on it a little bit. He touches on like the, you know, woke culture and being problematic and all this other stuff. And it's basically like, if you are a comedian, chances are you are one of those things, right? That's why you're a comedian, is because you battle such personal demons. Like, we know this.
This is very well documented throughout history.
This is what comedy, this is how comedy originates, basically, is out of tragedy and pain. And that's why so many of these people have such dark past, or skeletons in the closet,
or they succumb to
mental health demons, or drug addictions, or whatever it might be, and they're all kind of out there. They all have something a little loose, right? Who have we pointed at? Like, Seinfeld seems to be the only one we can even mention that is maybe.
Yeah, but then you really start to think about it, and there's weird shit about Jerry where you're like, he's not a normal person.
Well, and he's not. Watch Seinfeld one time for me, right?
Like, he's a neurotic nut.
The whole thing was about how he's kind of an awful person.
Him and Larry are trash humans.
Yeah, exactly. So, to be able to like say what he wanted to say in a funny and meaningful way,
without, and also shit on himself,
without just standing there and talking into a microphone and just like blowing minds with this thing, because that's what it did. Is absolutely, I think that every stand-up comedian out there had the fuck reaction. Because how could you not? Like,
well, dude, most people don't have the ability to like, all right, remember when we went and saw Kanye do Yeezus?
Yeah.
And we watched the show and it ended and we like walked out and we were just, it was one of those moments where it's like very, very few of these in your life. You're walking out with your friends and you're just like, that fucking changed our lives.
Yeah.
Like, nobody had done a show like that before. He was like, I'm going to go on tour for this album that I made. But we didn't know that when he was making the album, he was also considering the visuals so that he could do this whole fucking insane. It wasn't a musical concert like we were used to, just like this wasn't stand-up like we were used to. It was more like performance art. Jesus Christ came out on stage, Barrett. Like, Jesus right. was yeah. insanity. And this was like that for me with comedy. Like, watching it was like, oh, this dude just took his cock out and slammed it on the table and said to everybody else, like, I don't think you can touch me right now.
Yeah.
I don't think you can do better than this.
It,
like,
it was weird because I there are more, and I want to see if you can add anything to this. I had to write this down because I kept thinking of them and then I'd forget them. And I was like, I need to write these down because I'm going to forget. Here's the list of the things that I feel like Bo Burnham was either inspired by or wanted to reference or took cues from. And despite the fact that I've got this list of like things that he kind of mashed up, it's still a very singular new vision, which is what's incredible about it, because I could see all these different things in it.
Yeah.
But the sum is greater than the parts. So I obviously thought of Lonely Island.
Yeah.
Andy Samberg and kind of the original SNL digital short. Like the thing that they did that I thought was a piece of this was really, really good music that was funny.
And accompanied by very funny visuals, music videos that were hilarious.
Yeah.
A lot of this, I mean, you could argue the same way you could argue it was a musical. You could argue it was individual songs with individual music videos.
Yeah.
Right?
And then this also goes into a weird little dicky zone as well, but Lonely Island, I think, is the better comp. Lin-Manuel Miranda and specifically the Hamilton stuff.
Uh-huh. If you don't feel that, you're not paying attention, because it was like the way he wrote it and the way he constructed the songs to yes. be simplistic but hilarious but smart at the same time. Like, that was all Lin-Manuel style. Like,
yeah. Jason Segel's character in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah, man. That's a good pull. That's very much. I mean, I'd be fucking shocked if he didn't love that movie. I'm yeah. serious.
Bon Iver.
Yep.
Maybe that was just the look, but I just felt...
Nah, music style.
The music style, right, was a little Bon Iver. I want to talk specifically about the All Eyes on Me song.
Dude, that's...
But the first time I heard it, I was like, okay, what is this song? Like, where have I heard this before? And the closest I could get was Bon Iver.
But I don't know, man. It's one of those things where that's just a... Like, I mean, that one fucked me up.
I also have Kanye West / Drake on here because there's certainly a hip hop influence with the All Eyes on Me song, and there's a Kanye throughout. By the way, I wanted to touch on Kanye because what was the album where he wrote like I'm Bipolar, It's Super Fun or whatever on the front? Is it it's called Ye? I want to
yeah.
say
yeah.
I'm a non Kanye historian post T-Lop basically because I hate it all so much.
But, you had to abandon ship.
But
I'm still
that
here.
That's another incredible piece of inside. Is
hey,
that
you're wearing his shoes, Barrett. So am I.
These are not Yeezy foams. Actually, these are Merrell Hydromox. They look a lot like Yeezy foam runners.
Who would know that?
Yeah.
Other than you.
But what Kanye kind of wanted to do with Ye, I felt Bo Burnham was like, oh, I can do that better with inside, essentially, like the expression of mental health struggles through incredible bops.
I think Bo Burnham is less I guess
severely
impacted by his mental health situation. Yeah, like I think Kanye's pretty severely impacted.
And then the last person I have on here is Adam Driver because when you if
that's now, a random one.
Yeah, you're going to hear me say that, but now when you the next time you listen to All Eyes on Me,
you're going to
be like, "Oh my god, it does sound like Adam Driver." Let's talk about that song.
Yeah.
That's definitely the song that I keep going back to the most. Would you say it's your favorite?
Yeah, Barrett. It's not close. Okay. I've played it 1,000 fucking times.
Yeah, it is, and I started digging into Reddit threads about the show and about this song in particular when I was hunting for, like, why does this song remind me of something that I feel like I know so well?
Right.
I could never really figure anything out that paralleled it. So I'm running with some type of weird Bon Iver Kanye thing here. I think it
mixed with like a DJ.
Yeah. incredible, EDM. Incredible visuals to this. Just a shockingly stunning music video, basically, that he put together.
I mean, the visuals for the entire show.
And then I think this song is where he rounds out kind of some of the subversive things throughout the show. I think on its face, there's a lot of there's the mental health struggle piece of his life, especially going through the pandemic.
Yes.
And then on the surface, there's also a lot of like socio-political commentary with the problematic song and the, you know, what, and the This Is How the World Works song and a few others. But there's a lot of social media subtext here. And there, you have a song that's surface level, like White Woman's Instagram.
Sure.
Which, while I think is a bop, was maybe my least favorite part of the special.
Oh, hard disagree.
We can talk about that too. But there are some things in All Eyes on Me that and you know, this was with the help of Reddit, but basically when he says like got it good, now get inside, he's basically like, it feels to me like part of what he's saying with all of this is that social media owns you and the internet owns you now. And like with the world working the way that it does, like it's basically like a challenge. You know what I mean? Like shut the fuck up and put yourself out of your misery and just get in here, get inside. And it's a takedown. It's not what he actually wants. But there's, I feel like if you listen to this, the whole thing through and think about it with this, you know, with this in the front of your mind, I feel like one of the biggest things that he's saying is how awful social media is, has been, and will continue to be.
I would argue it's the internet, not just social media, that he shits on. And that when he says, got it, good, now get inside, it's I the whole message of the whole thing to me was like, this is over. There is no saving it. You say the whole world's ending, honey, it already did. You're not going to slow it. Heaven knows you tried. Got it. Good. Now get inside.
Yeah.
You say the ocean's rising like I give a shit. This whole thing is so fucking good, though,
it's
man.
So
but
amazing,
like, it's also like that song was also like what it feels like to have a panic attack. It was also like what it feels like to be depressed. It was also like what it feels to be just normal and question your surroundings and like everything going on in the world today. It was crazy to watch that sort of climax of all this, though, of the whole show, of inside into this like emotional moment where he's like, again, the thing about it, watching it to me as I was watching it, and I'm like, this is genius, just the way it was written and performed, but then the way it was shot and how he gave you the moments where it was like just fucking him in there,
mm-hmm.
losing his mind, trying to, you know, there's fucking equipment everywhere.
Yeah.
What do you think? Was this like, I don't know if you've read, I haven't looked into it. Was this like a side room on his house?
This
or like,
is a room in his house.
Yes. That uh-huh. he picked to make exclusively for this special.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's like his usual studio room or what. There was not any detail like that. But this is his house. This is a room in his house that he cleared out and made the set, the one set for this.
It also,
for this show.
This song, special. I'm gonna read the interlude. He's like, you want to hear a funny story? So 5 years ago, I quit performing live comedy because I was beginning to have severe panic attacks while on stage, which is not a great place to have them. So I quit, and he hit the laugh track button there.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I quit, and I didn't perform for 5 years, and I spent that time trying to improve myself mentally. And you know what? I did. I got better. I got so much better, in fact, that in January of 2020, I thought, you know what? I should start performing again. I've been hiding from the world, and I need to re-enter. And then, the funniest thing happened. And I have never identified more with a paragraph in my entire fucking life.
Yeah.
Just because, like, that was the exact same thing that happened to me. Not with 5 years or whatever, like, you know, I'd been having them for a minute. And it wasn't because of panic attacks that I, like, abandoned society. It was because of my, you know, relationship or whatever. But that was the same timing for me, bro. Like, in January, I was like, all right, I'm starting to come around here. And in February, I was like, maybe I could see other humans. And then, boom! And then, like, up until this came out, I don't think anybody had done jack shit to encapsulate what this experience felt like. And I have a hard time believing anybody will be able to do a better job moving forward.
Yeah.
And that was quick, Barrett. That was fucking quick. He made it during it, which I don't think anybody expected, to get, like, the piece of art that would, like, represent that time period so fucking perfectly, at least for my white ass.
Well,
and also, obviously, as a white dude who speaks into a microphone for a living, it was incredible to hear him, like, break down, like, the, like, American white guys, we've had the floor for at least 400 years, so why don't I just shut the fuck up?
I don't want to do that.
I'm bored.
I'm bored.
Yeah, that's how I feel all the time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
So, it was just nice to be represented, because we've never gotten that, American white guys, you know? So, thanks, Bo. Thanks for that.
Yeah, by the way, I don't know if you've watched with subtitles, but that laughter is described as something, and I'm forgetting the adjective, but it's really, really perfect. It's like, it's either disembodied or something like
maniacal?
That. It's the laugh track laughter.
Oh.
But it's basically a word that, like, is describing how it's essentially a nothing. Like, it's from nowhere. It's, like, doesn't have
a
source.
Right, 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 right. Okay.
So it's really, really an interesting addition to the feeling, because it's, like, it's creepy, right? It's kind of weird.
Oh, dude.
And so it's...
He talks about, like, you know, he hits on this other thing that really is also my life, and it's... Why would you tell a joke when nobody's there to laugh?
Uh-huh.
And then also last year he asked the question, like, you know, should I be joking at a time like this?
Yeah.
And I stopped joking for a while, and it turns out you should just, like, shut it the fuck down instead of doing what I did, which was, like, I wasn't joking anymore, but I kept doing the show. So the show wasn't the show that people were expecting anymore.
Right, right.
And it really fucked it up. I wish I had locked myself in a room like this dude. That would have been way more productive, and it turns out also lucrative.
Yeah, yeah, because they are going to pay him, even though he'd do it for free.
Uh-huh. Do you think he walked in with this and was like, hey, was this a bidding war? Like, what happened? This had to have been...
That's a good question.
Like, him and his agent had to have been, like, running around naked in Los Angeles. Like, who wants this for a fucking $1 trillion? For real, dude. I'm serious. Yeah, like, how the fuck?
So I don't know if he has an overall deal with Netflix to do comedy specials.
I'll look it up some other time.
Or if he made this and then they you know, started selling it.
I guess it doesn't matter.
Comedy, by the way, that is, I think, probably one of the sharpest songs. It's just such an amazing takedown. We just mentioned some of the lines from it. Really, really, really brilliant. I had to personally mention FaceTime with My Mom, because that's another one that is an absolute banger of a track, and also probably the most relatable and funny to me personally, because it's so on the nose.
Well, and we're the same fucking age as this guy, basically. I mean, we're 4 or 5 years apart from him, okay?
Yeah.
Our parents are about the same age. They're holding the phones 5 inches from their face.
Let's go to a couple critiques, because
sure.
I did have some that have that have largely faded since running through the soundtrack like a dozen times now.
Okay.
But right after I watched, I had a few hot takes, I guess. And I know you said that it was hard for you to kind of review this, since you feel so personal to, or so it's so close to and personal to you.
Yeah.
So White Woman's Instagram was the first one that I bumped up on a little bit. The main reason is because I feel like this joke has already been made for, like, the past 5 years. So much of this, like you said, this is so perfectly 2020. It's so frozen in this moment of time, even though he never even says the word pandemic.
True.
White Woman's Instagram took me out of it because it felt like something that could have been on SNL 4 years ago.
I think he
couldn't
resist.
By the way, has this dude ever written for SNL? Because I'm surprised that they're not being like, hey, we'll pay you $4 million a year to come write for us.
I don't think they play that way, though.
They don't.
But to your point, it's. I think, Barrett, the answer is he couldn't resist. I think he wrote that song, was like, fuck, this is funny. I think the concept of doing all the visuals
was... So the visuals were incredible.
And took him God knows how long.
Yeah.
Rewatching that one, I was like, oh, my God. Oh, like every 10 seconds I was like, oh no, because I was putting in my mind like how long it took to just get that one shot.
Yeah.
And there's 50 of them.
Basically, and all these songs are fun and they're good, but he mentions in All Eyes on Me how he like was basically about to maybe start go touring again.
Yes.
Makes me feel like he probably had written some material already.
Sure. And this might have been one of
them. And so White Woman's Instagram, sexting, unpaid intern, like some of the ones that felt less about the moment in time and more about like the general
takes.
Broader takes.
Sure.
Didn't hit as hard because the other stuff was so flawless in what it was tackling.
I'll say this one about White Woman's Instagram. I agree until he hits the part where he talks about putting up the picture of your favorite picture of your mom. And then it brings the whole thing full circle where you're like, oh my God, dude. Like,
yeah, it's pretty. I'm glad you brought that up because I had remembered to make my critique here, but I had also forgotten to talk about how
the depth of that part,
how dark it is, but also how kind of funny it is. And then also just how like
it's just real,
how
man.
Real it is.
It's
yes.
Just really, really, really real. Yeah. But I hated unpaid intern because I have unpaid interns. Look, dude, not everybody's Jeff fucking Bezos. I'm broke.
Your unpaid interns though are
We're not a major corporation.
There's a level of unpaid intern where it's like you're very clearly taking advantage.
Well, it's when you're a corporation that has, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue.
Your interns
don't have to
show up in person anywhere, by the way.
They don't have to do shit.
Get you coffee.
They make videos.
Okay. And then my second one.
And I take them out back and spank their tight little asses. Go ahead.
My second one was about the 30 song because I got to the halfway point and I was obviously vibing with it. It was so funny. It was so good. It was so perfect for the encapsulating and capturing how we were all feeling through the darker moments and really through all of the moments of 2020, even though there were some brighter spots for some of us here and there.
Certainly.
And then and then he drops the 30 song. And I just wanna stand here and say, And I know that this is, you know, this is Boomer Barrett getting up on the soapbox here,
sure.
having an old person take.
What's your old person
but
take?
30 is not fucking old.
He doesn't know, Barrett.
And
he's
it's
30.
Meaningless. It's a meaningless age that doesn't indicate shit except for that you're still a child, basically.
This is one of my favorite things about the special. I don't often get to watch somebody younger than me bring heat. Like, this was one of the songs that revealed, like, oh, he doesn't know everything yet. Thank fucking God.
Okay.
Because 30 doesn't mean shit, dick.
No.
At all. Yeah, no, I'm completely with you. It's like, dude, life is fucking crazy. Your age ends up being pretty insignificant in the grand scheme of things because everybody goes through all these different phases at different times and stuff, and it's wild. But 30 is not a gravestone at all, especially not anymore, man. Jay-Z's like 40 fucking 8. He dropped that line, 30's the new 20, like 40 years ago.
Yeah. I felt like...
When I was 10.
I appreciate your point there, that it's nice to be able to not just think that this guy, has it...
He knows everything.
That he knows everything.
Yeah.
Because up until then, I was really like, man, this dude...
Has it figured the fuck out.
And he must be my age. There's no way he's not 34, 35 years old.
Yeah.
And then he drops that he's turning 30, and I was like, wait,
son of a.
Then
bitch.
I started doing like then I'm trying to do like the math of when this guy first came on the scene because for some I remember it as like E-Bombs World era, but really it's like 2009 when he first hits.
Dude, I have
the
that
scene.
Same issue with that age of the internet though. Where there's things that I feel like were 2001 that were 2009,
like high school, like 2004 or 5,
right.
That are really like closer than we remember.
Uh huh.
Yeah. And so it just. That snuck up on me in a weird way, and it really, I guess it's either a compliment to Bo or I feel bad for him almost that he is so world weary, and so kind of like hurt by some of this stuff at an age that I'm like, God, that really, really is 30 is young still.
Well, I'll say this. As a dude who locked himself inside for all of 2020 and learned a bunch of shit he didn't really want to know, I feel him big time. Like, there's that thing you get taught as a little kid, like ignorance is bliss, and then And then there's what happened to me and this dude in 2020. And it's like it's the thing that teaches you how true that is, because we all got too dug in, man. Like there was, if you were in a position where you were spending most of your time alone in solitude in 2020, you just got inundated with all this fucking negativity and political horse shit and social uproar. It was fucking chaos. And I think it was like, for a guy like him who clearly was struggling with anxiety and depression, it was crushing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I he thought about killing himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, there's gotta be representation of that somewhere in there. And I think that fucking 30 song, it's the only time you're really like, God damn, man. Like,
well,
fucking, you're gonna be okay. This is hilarious.
Right. You're gonna be fine is basically the reaction.
The best thing
there.
I've ever seen. Yeah. You're gonna be all right.
I don't know if you've talked about this on RBP, and I know we gotta wrap it up here. So this can be one of the last things talk about. But one thing that very, very clearly happened over the course of 2020 is millennials entered the pandemic as like the youth.
Yeah.
As like the people that were setting the trends and kind of starting to make the world tick. And like really, really out there on the bleeding edge of everything. We were the ones creating and using all these things that we use, like that we talked about up front, Uber and Airbnb and like all this, you know, we were killing everything. We were killing napkins. We were killing
straws.
Straws. We killed all
Adrian Grenier,
we killed sex, all sorts of stuff that we just stopped doing and quit using. And we were very much written about as like the, you know,
destroyers of worlds.
We were the powerful, generating youthful force. We left the pandemic as very clearly on the other side of that fence.
Yeah.
And it was one of the weirdest things to watch over the, you know, over these last 5 months has basically been like, oh shit, millennials, we're old now.
Yeah.
We're the Gen X that I grew up with, essentially.
We're the very end of that finish line there where we would have felt the transition, and instead we just pop back out.
We just pop back out, and millennials are like are kind of a
boomers. We're old.
But we're quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes here because we're obviously not that old either, but we are old.
I've been getting called a boomer for like a year though, dude.
So
this shit started a minute ago.
So I will just throw him that bone that if you, and 30 is right there, he's a younger millennial. We're like middle to older millennials. But if you're part of our generation, then you got lumped in with us. So Bo, even though he's only 30, is probably experiencing some of that same phenomenon where, like, post-pandemic, he's now looked at as an old, essentially, not a young, not a youth.
Well, he even touches on it.
And so that...
He
so
says,
that,
like,
that
all
is...
these fucking... He said all these Gen Z kids keep telling me I'm out of touch.
Yeah.
In the special, he actually hits on it.
So that definitely... You know, I feel for the people that are, like, in that 28 to 30 young part of the millennial range... And it's like, man, you really got railroaded because you're young as fuck, basically. And you're getting thrown under the bus with us 34, 35, and even up to like 36, 37-year-olds is like, get out of here, you olds.
CEO entrepreneur born in 1964, Jeffrey Bezos. Dude, that's one of the funniest songs too, bro. Like,
love that it recurs. That's again, he got the
can't get it out of my head.
The recurring piece is such a musical, is such a thing that is born out of musicals.
Well, in the way Barrett, he ties lines from other songs into other songs, and then into the final song, which has references to all of the other songs.
Them, yeah,
that's on some Lin-Manuel
totally.
Marrera shit. Miranda.
Yeah. So, yeah, man. I mean, I know we could sit here and talk about this thing for another hour, but I think the point is
it's very, very good.
Thing is very, very good. The music is incredible. And after you watch, you're definitely going to be able to, you're going to want to go on Spotify and bump all the tracks. And
dude,
there
was a gap between me watching it and it making Spotify.
Yeah, a few days.
For me, it was longer.
For me, it was like two and a half days. Yeah.
I was listening to it on bootleg websites for a couple days there. Yeah, this guy's gonna make a ton of money.
You gotta go watch this thing if you haven't already.
Yeah, it's just unbelievably well done. It's incredible, like Barrett and I said, to see something that kind of blends all these genres of stand up and musical and TV and sketch comedy, and it's just art.
Yeah.
The guy
it really is.
That's a talented comedian.
Very talented. I still am just blown away that this dude is sitting there writing that music. These are hits.
Yes.
These are hits.
I can't believe he's setting up all the fucking equipment and doing all the filming and stuff. I can believe he almost killed himself.
I loved how he showed you some of that, right? shows you the little gave like, me anxiety light just looking on his head go do the disco light thing.
Dude, and one of them, he uses his own phone and spins and uses that as a way to create shadows in the room. And it's like unbelievable. Yeah. You're just like, how long did it take to even set that shot up, though? Like, if anybody's ever fucked with cameras, we have two cameras. I don't know how either of these motherfuckers work. I don't set any of this shit up.
Yeah.
And I don't want to. You know why? Because it's frustrating as fuck. It's annoying. Computers suck. I just want to talk into the microphone and go home. This dude's in there making movie himself.
Yeah.
Crazy. Anyway, go watch Inside on Netflix, and whatever Netflix paid him, they should double that. And
well, they probably will for the next one.
God damn it. Should we even watch the next one?
Yeah, man. I'm not.
You can't beat this though.
But here's the great thing about stuff like this is this. The next one won't be a sequel.
It'll be a paradigm shift.
But right. Bo will. You know, this dude is brilliant. He'll go figure out the next thing. I think one thing that we can definitely expect is more music, which he should definitely keep doing.
Please,
because,
God.
Right. But like that. That's another brilliant thing about when he's released this is that if he had. Let's just say he'd waited another year tying up all the loose ends or finishing this. This wouldn't hit the same.
Oh.
This had to be released right now.
Dude, it was perfect time.
Because so much of this emotion is like starting to actually bleed out of us now.
And
right?
We're looking back and going,
and dissipate.
God damn.
Right. Yeah. And you look back at the year and you just think about what a hellacious, you know, nightmare this was.
It took so long.
And And so this is the perfect moment in time. And I think that these songs in this particular special will endure because they're so well written and they touch on so many other things with the mental health and the social media and the sociopolitics and the internet and all that. But the emotion behind it hits right now.
Yes.
That's hits hardest right now.
Pretty rare to see something so well done, so perfectly executed, but then the timing be so perfect as well to where it just is like, you're just like, wow, this is amazing. So yeah, we ended up talking about Inside from Bo Burnham on Netflix pretty much the whole episode today. But we'll be back next week with...
Yeah, for all... And I mean, we're talking musicals here. So for all my Broadway boys and Broadway girls
out there...
And
I'm going to hit this before next episode.
Check out In the Heights. It's on HBO Max. It's very good. If you liked Hamilton, you're going to like this.
So you thoroughly enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
Broadway boys.
It's a fun summer watch. You're going to enjoy yourself.
We'll also be back for The Sopranos on Thursday on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. And in closing,
you got to hit the books.
Zuckerberg and Gates and Buffett, amateurs can fucking suck it. Fuck their wives, drink their blood. Come on, Jeff, get them. All right, that's it.